This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the League podcast, episode 403, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the League podcast, episode 403. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hello there.
And Josh Flanagan.
So has anything significant been going on lately?
We are iFanboy. We like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about it in the show, and along with the other books of the week and other topics of interest. I've got a date I got to get to. That's what's happening right now.
You're having a fridge delivered. Stop.
I'm having a fridge delivered. I need to get done before that happens. Emails, voicemails, all that stuff is going on. It's going to happen in the middle of the show. I can just tell. I can feel it already. In which case, we'll bring the guys on and see what they think of the thought about Deadpool this week.
That would be, listen.
Before, yes.
If that has to happen now. If they come, you have to ask them. And no matter what it is, the audio, it should be truthful.
I want that. That's the thing is, I want the fridge. I want them not to look at me and then turn around and leave with the fridge.
They can't. Once the fridge is there, they're not going to lug it back down the stairs out of comic book spite.
Before we get to the show, quick word of caution. It's a review show, so we're talking about the plot points this week. So if you haven't read the books, pause the show and come back. It'll be more enjoyable for you and for everyone else, and mostly for us. This week,
Paul had the pick.
That's right.
Hey. Hey.
Thanks, Connor. All right. No, this week it's all about the tears of a clown. Deadpool number 16. I wouldn't have thunk it, but it happened. I picked a Deadpool book. Yeah, this is weird. It's weird. Connor, you were talking about it last time. It was weird picking a book and not writing about it. It changes the way you think about the books you're reading.
I know, and I told you
that.
You denied it would happen.
And I didn't.
Wrong.
I was like, no. I was like, it'll be the same. But they say that that funny people make the best dramatic performances. It's something that has to do with the range and also maybe partly to do with like the contrast of seeing them so often being comedic and then being, you know, like being heartfelt, being being in pain. And that's what happened with Deadpool. And so my pick is based on sort of the surprise of the range of this character and what they're able to do with them. So I don't have a great deal of history with this character and have tended to avoid Deadpool books. But over time, and especially lately, Deadpool, I've come to understand, and it strikes me that he's this incredibly volatile tool for subversion and for metafiction and breaking that fourth wall. And that's been used to great effect by writers like Joe Kelly and Rick Remender in Uncanny X-Force, but also abused by so many people. And I know that by reputation, and that's why I've tended to avoid it. But it's that difference between like the best Looney Tunes cartoons and like the garbage, you know, and like the easiest slapstick.
To think of the worst Looney Tunes cartoons. Do you have an example?
Do I have an example? Like Speedy Gonzales is probably bad Looney Tunes.
Whoa. Come on now.
I don't think we should talk about this.
Okay, we shouldn't talk about this. This is getting controversial. This is more controversial than I expected it to be.
It's the one where Umra hunts him again, but it's just slightly different. The other one was like, just stop. Just that's not. It's fine.
So what is going on in this book? Last time there was stuff from the 70s happening.
That's the thing about this book is that it's different, and every couple of between arcs they'll do like a very strange thing. And I mean, I think what Paul's getting at is that this was a much more subdued and dramatic issue than any of the other ones so far.
Yeah, those retro ones are sort of like the 70s or the 60s stuff, and those are really like sort of meta commentary on what was going on in the books at that time and that period. And I think part of it has to do with having Duggan and Posehn working on this together, I think they have slightly different sensibilities that work really well together. And so I think that, you know, Posehn is more towards the laugh out loud funny stuff, and Duggan is more towards maybe a little bit of the pathos that we're getting. That's just my inclination.
Having read The Infinite Horizon, I would say that you're not entirely 100% off.
Okay.
I'm guessing. I don't know. I haven't read Brian Posehn's dramatic comic book.
Sure. So but right now, Deadpool, it's this the good, the bad, and the ugly arc. And right now, Deadpool is trapped in North Korea in sort of this residual weapon plus program thing. And they're exploiting his healing factor, combining it with other mutant DNA to create the sort of island of Dr. Moreau meets Alien Resurrection kind of cast of copycat mutants. Like he teams up with a fake Nightcrawler, like a clone Nightcrawler with sores all over him, but he still has the ability to, you know, teleport. And this is really haunting scene where they're not taught, like they didn't have a Professor Xavier to tell them how to use their powers. It was sort of literally trial by fire where they're staked out and these soldiers are going to shoot at them and they have to transport to survive, to get away. And a bunch of them didn't have that instinct and just died. And so it's just this the darker side of the mutant experience.
They're created mutants. They're genetic.
Yeah. It's a combination of like his DNA and other mutants' DNA.
The idea is that they took some of the other mutants' DNA and tried to graft them onto people, but that didn't work. So then when they took the other people's mutants and they combined it with some of Deadpool's DNA, then it does work, but they all end up with rough skin. To simplify it somewhat.
And they're just like, they're living in a prison camp, which you see on the cover of the book. But what's interesting is that, you know, Deadpool, most of this issue isn't even in his trademark costume. He's He's pretty raw. He doesn't have the mask, and he's pretty much wandering around in like in a lab coat. And yeah, and he's got the sores all over him, pretty gnarly looking. And in addition to all that, the character is also kind of different because his memory has been scrubbed a little bit from his time in the Bacta tank. And that's the only thing I'm ever going to be able to call it. With all the hoses coming out of his junk. But he's also, in addition to all this, he's got this S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, the S.H.I.E.L.D. liaison, Agent Preston, died. And then a necromancer put her spirit, her consciousness in Deadpool's head. So they're both sort of vying for control of the body and the ability to speak using the body. And there's just a dialogue between the two of them told through the caption boxes, mostly yellow and pink. Yellow for Deadpool, pink for Agent Preston. And we never see Agent Preston. I think previously we've seen her wandering around in like a visualization of Deadpool's mind. But in this one, she's just a disembodied voice. And it works really well. And I thought it was a really good use of the medium. It's really good, you know, use of comics and the mechanics of comics.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a really great character piece and did something with Deadpool that, even though I'm not, you know, the most experienced seasoned Deadpool reader, it feels like something that's new and interesting. And uses his bicep as a silencer, which is a pretty cool idea, but also it kind of shows this level of self-disregard or self-hatred that this character has for himself, that he'd use his body like that, even though he has a healing factor. Using your arm as a silencer is a messed up thing to do. And I think that says a lot about the character.
I think...
So it's moments like that.
What I was noticing is that this is Declan Shalvey and Jordy Belair's second issue on this, second issue of the arc. And it's definitely, from an artistic standpoint, it's not as light, I suppose, which fits. But I thought that was the...
It's not as comedic.
Yeah, it isn't. It's not at all. There's one panel at the beginning, basically, where Deadpool's stuck in his own head and he's in a sweater and he's carving a turkey, but that's all sort of a, you know, then the rest of it's straight up action comics. And it's really interesting like that because the rest of the book up to this point has been so goofy. I mean, obviously, because that's Deadpool's thing, but the thing that impressed me most is the fact that it's the same character and the same writers. You know, they tweak the art a little bit by bringing on different people, which they've been doing, but it just has a completely different tone than everything else. But yet, it also fits in. It was a really, you know, that's what Paul was talking about. Like, it's saying, all right, that was the fun part. Here's the other side of that. It is really well done. And then there's a nice cliffhangery thing at the end with some superheroes because that's what you're here for.
Yeah, and I think whether it's intentional or subconscious or it's just some kind of happy accident, and maybe I'm bringing something to this. I feel like Declan Shalvey was channeling Guy Davis a bit here, and there's a particular panel when the introduction of the North Korean guard, it just looked like a Guy Davis, like right out of like BPRD kind of drawing. And you don't think of that when you think of Deadpool, but you know, like this whole story, it doesn't feel like foreign to the character. It just feels like new territory. And it's very expressive. And obviously he's not in the mask. He looks very different, but it just feels like a very damaged guy. And knowing what he was before, that makes it even more heartfelt, and tough to see.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like he got a rawer deal, more raw deal than Wolverine did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's like they cured his cancer as it was like a byproduct of like what their experimentation on him. And then they just dumped him and he went on to become this thing. And they call him Free Range. Like they allowed him to go out into the world and do his Deadpool thing. Whereas Wolverine, they wanted to monitor him. And the mistake there was that the guys, everyone who was monitoring him in the Weapon X program is dead because he broke free and just killed everybody. And now they're sort of seeing that with Deadpool because they brought him back for a second time.
Well, you know, I'm sure your little Deadpool book was great and all, but Astro City number 4 for me was where it was at this week.
Boy, you want to just like, if you ever wanted a response to the "you can't go home again" idea in comics, I was like, boy, that was just But did I miss this issue in 1997?
This was spectacular, and there's already been a pick of the week for this book, but this was by far the best. I mean, it's only been four issues, but this has by far been the best issue.
This was the runner-up.
One of the best single issues I've read this year so far, I think.
I just didn't like the art, and that kept me back.
See, you just hate Brent Anderson is the problem.
I don't hate him as a person. I just
get that. No, I totally do, but for Connor and I, who've been with Astro City for
20 years.
Yeah, I mean, like an absurd amount of time. Like, it's what it looks like, I guess. Yeah. You know, like, this is what Astro City looks like. And I totally understand you, because a more sophisticated version of me doesn't really like this art that much either, but in this context.
But it's what it looks like. And I wouldn't want this book drawn by anybody else.
No, absolutely.
Pick the best book artist you can find, and I wouldn't want them to draw this book.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's got to be Brent Anderson.
It's like AC/DC. Like, you know, there's nothing very complicated about that, but those are all the parts, and that's what it sounds like, and that's what it's supposed to be, and I do feel that way about this.
It's part of the
like
charm.
Sticks.
It's part of the charm. I mean, like, you know, the characters are all look, you know, out of fashion and out of date, and that's part of the charm of the book.
I thought it was really interesting that the woman, Martha, who's the sort of, basically, if you haven't read this, it's a very complicated day in the life.
And it's a one shot
of a woman who has power. She's a telekinetic, but she has for whatever reason not become a superhero. And then
she tried being a hero. Yeah. She tried being a supervillain, and neither of those worked. And then she discovered there's a third option. There's just being me.
And I gotta say, this is a story that, you know, like, this should have been told. Like, this is the kind of thing that is super interesting to me. Like, in a world of powers, why would everybody be a superhero? And
right.
And we discover here there's a whole subculture of it. Yeah. There's like a bunch of people.
It gets bigger and bigger, and they all end up working in Hollywood, which I think is hilarious.
But it's like the idea that not everyone is heroic in their personality. So, yeah, you can do these things that still requires you to have the courage to face down someone. And I think what's interesting is they end up finding that courage anyway.
Sure.
You know, because at the end, you know, what happens is that this woman, Martha, who works in Hollywood as a stunt coordinator, lack of a better term, she basically moves people around, making them look like they have powers on TV shows with superheroes and moves fire. It was a lot of very interesting things they had her doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's old. She's had her nice life, but the supervillain tries to recruit her and her friends, who are also basically just using their powers in their everyday jobs, and they end up defeating him, as heroes do, but they're not heroic people, but they are, which I think
they're called, like, sideliners, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a great scene at the end where Samaritan shows up and says, hey, you know, you could have called us. We were, you know, we all like you. But
I love when Samaritan shows up and talks. He doesn't very often.
Yeah.
So it's actually really special when he does and he says anything. And he's got that thing where you just remember that first issue where you know he's got shit he's got to be doing. He goes, so everything is timed right down to the second. It's always like a treat when he shows up, I think. I also loved that the villain in this was so ridiculous. Like, and that's
Major
really,
Domo.
That's exactly, it's just stupid. But that's exactly the thing that Connor's talking about when you talk about Brent Anderson's work with this. It's like you've pasted these real lives onto what are essentially like the worst kinds of like 80s and 70s superhero comics, or just the most, you know, the most silly. All existing in the same world. It was fun.
I really enjoy it. I love the character. I love the idea. This is what you want out of Astro City, is for Kurt Busiek to explore what it means to be a superhero, but not necessarily in the context that you imagine it.
I think that having just recently read, not Secret, is it Secret Identity? Yeah, Secret Identity.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's clearly got a really, like, he's got an interest in, and he's done this before, but taking these superpowers and really thinking about how they would exist in our world.
Yeah.
I love that element of it. That's the thing that gets really interesting to me, which is funny because that's the other side of the coin of the thing that ruins a lot of superhero comics, to try and explain them too much.
Right.
But he does it in an interesting way, I guess. He's not trying to explain the things that are stupid, but sort of think about how the world works.
Yeah, I mean, there's a personality type that wouldn't necessarily throw on a costume, but would use his telepathic powers to advise businesses during employee interviews, and that would be a valuable skill. Or the guy who's super strong and just wants to work construction, doesn't want to be a superhero.
There's going
to
be a lot of union issues.
Little privacy problems in Astro City. Or the guy who can DJ and feed off the crowd's emotion and heighten it. I think there's a lot of interesting things going on here, and you don't dwell on them too much. It's just these are the people that live on the sidelines of being a superhero.
It's a really well-structured one-shot. Like, it just begins and ends and just perfect. like bookends. Perfect.
I'm glad he's throwing these in. It started with a one-shot, then we had a two-parter, now a one-shot again. I like that he's not afraid to mix it up lengthwise.
Well, what we did learn is that 6 issues is too much.
Not always.
I know, but from
it was like those last couple that
from
were
the
bad.
Dark Ages, we were like, okay.
But just, look at the original ones, like the Confessor storyline. Oh,
that's the only one, though. That's the only long storyline.
The only one?
Yeah. Before they got to the Dark Ages, that was the only longer storyline. I think is it only 4 issues?
Confessor was so good that it cancels out those other bad ones.
I know. But everything else was, up until that point, they were all one-shots, and then there was a couple of two-issue arcs, like the Jack in the Box one, and there was a Turtle one that was a little longer.
Teenage Mutant Ninjas. All right, so Captain America 11, this is the first issue since Dimension Z, and I thought it was really good because I'm so conflicted on what happened in it. And I think that not liking necessarily what happened in it was a strength of the issue.
You mean the fire?
Yeah, so as you know, the last 10 issues, Captain America's been trapped in Dimension Z. He's been fighting Artem Zola, and now he's finally out. His surrogate son was killed. Agent Carter is trapped in Dimension Z, but everyone thinks she's dead. And so now he's dealing with the fallout physically and emotionally of what he went through. He was there for a decade, where it was only moments for the rest of us, or months for us, but moments for the people in the comic. And so he, after going through some surgery, some really awful, where they were pulling his skin really far, it made me cringe.
Yeah, open heart surgery to the nth.
it really made me cringe when I realized I was looking at his skin being pulled. And then some debriefing with New Fury, and he goes off with Jet is her name.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Jet. And she takes her back to his awesome Brooklyn loft where he's got all his mementos.
Gotta say, really put a lot of emphasis on that giant Nazi banner in the middle of the room.
Well, first I thought the idea that one of his walls is a hologram, which allows him to fly in, which really wreak havoc in the winter because holograms, as far as I know, do not block the cold.
He's got force fields.
But so he has this awesome room where he keeps all these trophies and things from his past, and Jet convinces him that it's a bad idea to live in the past, so he takes them to the roof and sets them all on fire. And I thought that was a really hard scene to watch, especially for someone like me who loves Captain America so much.
I like how he has a shield Zippo.
it was probably a Christmas gift one year. You know, I got like a chair one time and a blanket.
Yeah.
Never got a Zippo, though.
Shield Zippo.
He's got like one for the Avengers, one for the Defenders.
Yeah, all the teams. New Avengers, Mighty
was
Avengers.
Was he ever on the Thunderbolts? Yeah, he was. He's the captain, wasn't he?
Maybe, but
he was.
It just, they didn't it get really, Avengers.
Those were just,
I didn't,
like,
not the police. Defenders, I meant the Invaders, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That
one's not a Zippo. Yeah, that's he's got like a flint.
And it's like an old style fleece, so it's really baggy sleeves. Like, and then it tapers on the bottom, so it looks like he's from the 90s.
Anyway, I had a real big problem with what he did, but I think I liked that of it.
Yeah, no, that's a good reason. I think that's a mature way to look at it. I think I thought it was interesting that Pacheco basically was sort of doing a Romita ape job.
Yeah,
which normally wouldn't work. Now I had a question. Couple of questions. The guy with the flag on his face, he is from Jason Aaron's Ultimate Captain America series.
It's Nuke.
It's Nuke?
Yes.
Has he been in regular Marvel world?
Yes.
Okay. Other question. When Captain America was in Dimension Z the whole time, did he have his old uniform on?
Yes, he did. Yes.
And now he's got this dumb one on?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. Why are they ruining all the uniforms?
Because they got to make them look like the movies.
We did fine for years without doing that. I mean,
there was one panel, it was a close up on his face wearing the mask, and I was just like, I couldn't help but laugh because he's just so ridiculous
it's
looking.
Stupid.
Like, at least smooth it out.
Like, even in the movies, they avoid putting on the mask. Like, he only has it on when he absolutely
look at that.
Has
look at the scene where he's driving the little hover car home, and it's like the close up of him steering, and he's just staring at us, and it's just, I can't take it seriously because he's wearing a space helmet.
He looks like a dipshit. Jimmy, what do they look like? Looks like dorks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good issue. I really liked it. It was well colored.
Dean White does a good job of making it feel like it's still the same.
That's what I meant. It's consistent.
It's cohesive. But
I would, you know, you could have done anything with all that stuff other than burn it.
Right. donate it to a museum. I'm sure a museum would be happy to have that stuff.
It is historically significant. Yeah. Also, I thought it was funny that he has a giant poster, wall size print of like him, the Howling Commandos.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, who took that photo? That's amazing. At some point in the war, they all stopped and like posed for this amazing Annie Leibovitz type photo.
That is a wonderful segue to Star Wars 9.
All right.
I was going to give you nuke trivia.
Well, we can get that in a second, but the segue was too perfect to pass up. Star Wars number 9, I really enjoyed. excuse me. This is where Leia has been stranded out in space. She went to Alderaan. She gets picked up by a giant ship. Turns out there's a guy who's an Alderaanian. He's been collecting artifacts to try to keep their culture alive. Turns out, once again, he's the actual guy who... I'm dying here. He created
the laser.
I know what you're going to say, and it's hilarious, and I didn't think of it. Go ahead.
So then she has her suspicions about who this guy is. He goes off to make some tea, and she rummages through his library, and a book falls out, and a bunch of photos fall out of the book.
Vader, will you take the picture for us, Vader?
You wonder who the fuck is walking around the Death Star with a Polaroid camera having Grandma Tarkin pose with people.
It's like a cardboard cutout of Grand Moff Tarkin.
Lord Vader, would you please? Where's the button? Hold on. Which one? No, you got to hold it halfway down.
Which one do I look through?
He's got a Death Star medallion, too.
Oh, it's on film. It's on video.
He clunks against his eyepiece. Hold on. Shooting video.
Oh, wait. Which one's Flash?
No, you're all blown out. Let me do another for safety. For safety.
Oh, Tarkin blinked. You always blink, Tarkin. I just started laughing in the middle of it because it's like, especially look at Tarkin's expression in that photo. He's like, he doesn't want to be in the photo. He's like, all right, these are my underlings. I got to make him happy. He did design the laser. I'll take the picture.
And then the Alderaan guy's like, he's kind of smiling, but he's like, ah. That's good stuff.
It's just who... You know,
I think I missed an issue with this. I started, I was like, oh, I definitely missed something, but
well, anyway, I really enjoyed, but I enjoyed the rest of that scene. I like the idea of this guy is, you know, feeling guilty about what he did, and he's trying to keep the culture alive. I liked that scene a lot.
He didn't sign up for that. Oh yeah, sure. No, I'll totally build it. Because you remember, the Empire is just the government,
right?
So he was a military, and he's like, oh sure, no, this is my job. He thought he was just working, you know, good government job.
He's a public service guy. He just he passed the exam. He got the highest rating. Got put on the Death Star community. You know, not the committee, but you know, he's not in the committee, but he's in the crew. And all of a sudden, he's building a laser that blows up his home planet. I also really enjoyed Wedge and Luke's adventures in the Imperial ship.
Yeah, and Wedge not used to seeing, you know, a Jedi. Like nobody's used to seeing a Jedi at this point, and you know they're from the history books and. I thought Wedge was Han Solo for a little bit, but then I figured it out. Right, yeah.
I was much happier when I was like, oh, it's Wedge!
I know, I felt for you because I know you're a big Wedge fan.
Ryan Kelly's either really on it or his stuff is a little off, but it's just a great Boba Fett.
It is. I really
You could look at one panel and there's Wedge, and then right under it there's a panel and it's Han because the scene changes and they look exactly the same. Like.
It's good. I really enjoyed this issue, though.
That 70s hair makes it hard to...
Everybody was shaggy.
No,
and I also
Hans
like that Leia...
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, Leia is going incognito as, what is Brea? Yeah. Organa, which is her foster mother's name.
It's a poor choice.
Who died on Alderaan. But it was like, I was like, Brea? It was like, it's like I went to my dentist. His name was Krentist.
Right. Mulva.
It's a really bad choice.
Mulva?
Of that.
I really
we should stop. You're not going to beat the picture thing. Hold on. Wait, that's the flash button.
Dolores. So
should it be on the picture of the flower? Is that the focus set? Hold on. It's on manual.
So Smallville season 11. So one thing we decided with the show now that we're off the website is that previously, we discussed the books based on what was on the comics page, which meant for DC digital books, we discussed them once they came out paper-wise. But Paul and I were talking it over as the ones who read the DC digital books and decided we would jump ahead now and talk about them as they come out digitally.
We're doing whatever the hell we want.
Is basically the point. These books come out once a week, so we're not going to talk about them every week.
No.
Although in the case of Little Batman, they come out every other week. But I did want to sort of, you know, alert people to that fact. People following along at home may want to catch up on the digital stuff. But I've been really enjoying Smallville's current Wonder Woman storyline, which is about halfway through. It's on chapter 7 of 12 now. Really great introduction to Wonder Woman. I think Brian Q. Miller has a really, really nice handle on her. It's sort of that pure... It reminds me a lot of the Wonder Woman, the way they handled her when she appeared the first time out of Crisis, because in this story it's her first appearance out of in the Smallville world, and she's her first appearance in the world of men. And I like the entire fabric that he's built into this world. You know, we've got the DEO and Bones and Director Bones and all the characters showing up. There was a brief Speedy and Black Canary appearance in the last arc, and I really enjoy the tapestry that he's creating in this whole world. It's a lot of fun, I think. So, Smallville's really good. All the other books are good, too. I caught up on a bunch of them this past week. And I really do think that these are the best on aggregate books that DC is putting out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, between Adventures of Superman, which I think is really excellent, Smallville, yeah. Little Gotham, Little Gotham, which I also caught up on, which has had some just incredible issues, Batman 66. I think on the whole, this is the strongest line that DC's
okay,
got.
Okay, I'll give you that from a line.
Probably.
This is just vaguely, and I'm behind on it, but I was reading the Wolverine story that Jason Aaron is doing, Japan's Most Wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very good.
Which one?
It's the digital only.
I have not been reading.
I know. I'm just telling you. It's as these are good with DC, those are also pretty good. I'm behind. I'm not up to issue. But
hey, this is really good, guys. This is a really good quality. We should hide this. Should hide this away. No one knows about it.
What I want to do is I want to take the best writers we can get and squirrel them off to a ghetto. And then, you know, they're getting better. There's more better.
Paul, I don't know if you are you caught up, Paul, on these books? Because
on Smallville, no. But
what about Batman 66? Because they have returned the special pop-up animation to Batman 66.
Yeah, I think it's all about Case. And those effects, I think, really makes that book. They've had some guest artists on there, and they're all right. But I think it's part of that whole experience. It really makes that book and elevates it to something else. Yeah. So.
I'm going to read the hell out of Aquaman. I know that.
We're going to talk about that in a bit, actually.
Okay. So we're going to be talking more about the digital books as they come out, also other digital comics as well. So we're basically, as Paul said, doing whatever the hell we want.
Yeah,
moving forward, no more rules.
I've got a review of this Gypsy Danger action figure that I've got. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Not really.
I mean, if you hear an awkward cut in the show, that's when we cut that part out of the show.
Yeah.
And Josh, tell the people how they can help.
Suppose that you are a Sith Lord, and you've been walking around on the Death Star, and people are constantly asking you to pose for pictures. Now, it's difficult to learn how to use all those different devices. So you want to just get yourself one sort of compact, easy to put in your cloak digital device.
A DSLR, somebody can...
No. Something no? More of a pocket camera, because that's most people
point
are
shoot.
Not. Yeah, but yeah, yeah. Nice, a point and shoot camera.
You can fit your little utility belt.
Yeah, yeah. You want to press one of the buttons on your chest and it sort of pops out of a compartment. Something like that. That's what I think. And then, you know, something, it's got Wi-Fi, so you can email those pictures right away, because otherwise they're on your app. Can I get that card? Like, it's a whole thing.
This is not a product that is offered. But
after his after his shift, he has to go back to his room and upload them all. He's just like,
Lieutenant
Tyrell is asking me for those photos from the barbecue last week.
We are collectively the worst group of Darth Vader impressions. We're not even trying.
No, that's the great thing about it. I don't care.
I assume he has an SD card slot. In his chest thing.
In his helmet?
He has to.
That's where the Wi-Fi comes from, Paul. It's from his helmet.
He might have the Sony proprietary ones.
You're telling me they don't have point-and-shoot cameras that have a Wi-Fi uplink?
No, I'm saying the chest plate thing? I was like, they don't have that.
They don't sell that in Amazon. We're saying in the Star Wars world in Amazon.
You get a GoPro.
No, this is a world where they deliver to the Death Star. So you gotta use your... And what I'm saying is go to Amazon.com. ifanboy.com/Amazon.
What if Amazon checks these? What if they look...
I don't think they haven't asked us to do anything.
Right, that's true.
We're just trying to move product, dude. And
They don't care that they make a profit on their products. They don't care how we do the ad reads.
My point is basically, you can get a lot of stuff for your various needs That one example I just used being a very extreme and fictitious example. But if you wanted to help out the site in a very easy and innocuous way, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon as your portal to Amazon.com, and then we get a little bit of that. And we really appreciate it. It's actually a big and important part of our upkeep income.
Buy a rhinoceros.
Can you buy a rhinoceros? I can't imagine you can buy.
We're saying you can buy anything. This is anything goes, is what you're telling
me. So, we're trying to stay out of the realm of poaching and, you know.
That's not where I was going. You'd be a friend of the rhinoceros. You'd adopt the rhinoceros.
Oh, well, you know, you make some sense. The thing is, we were on a whole Star Wars kick, and you went and took it in a different direction, which honestly threw me and Connor off.
Buy a Banta.
There you go.
Did you say
Banta? Like the rhinoceros.
Did you say Banta?
Like Tony Banta from Taxi, yeah.
It's Bantha.
Bantha?
Yes. Yeah, good Lord.
Isn't Bantha Poodoo?
Yes.
Oh, stop.
No, he's exactly right.
Bosque.
Lock and key, Paul.
Lock and key alpha number one. This is the, they're doing, okay. Lock and key alpha Poodoo. Number one. This is the end of Lock and Key from Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez.
This
and
is the last mini?
This is the last meeting. I think it was supposed to all be an Omega, and they're like, you know, we need some more room, so we're going to do two Alpha issues. So there's one more, and it looks like the last one is going to be like an epilogue, because they've finished up a lot of the business. And the problem here is that there's a lot going on in this issue, and it feels like they're cramming a bit too much into the end. I think they could have even done with another like mini, but this it's sort of been going in this direction that they're trying to tie up all of these plot lines, and it's taken away a little bit from the great pacing of previous arcs of this book. And they've like in those first two especially, they, you know, created some really interesting horror and some great mystery and just like wonderful character stuff. And here there's so much going on, and it's almost like a parody of big superhero events where there's like big muscled guys and, you know, people coming through doors and like alternate versions of what could happen if Dodge wins and things like that. And I think there's just a bit too much going on. And but I'm glad that there's going to be another issue that seems like it's going to be more of a cool down kind of thing. So I don't know if this sticks the landing.
We'll find out next month, I guess.
We'll find out next month.
Wow. Or 6 weeks or whenever it comes out.
Yeah.
Kind of a bummer.
It is. It kills me. I love this book.
I know. I don't even like hearing you say that. Like was your, anyway. I think people should check out Ghosted. The third issue, Ghosted 3, came out this week, and it's sort of a supernatural heist scam thing, and it's very fun.
Who does it?
Written by Josh Williamson and drawn by Goran Sudzaka,
nice.
You may remember as the fill-in artist for Why the Last Man and a bunch of other stuff since then, but that's mainly
yes.
where I know him. This was just a good, it's like you get a team together and they all had different things, but the deal is they're trying to steal a ghost. So that gets, that gets complicated. And then
do they have one of the containment things that the Ghostbusters have? Does anyone at any point pull a tablecloth off of a table and say the flowers are still standing?
Possibly off panel.
Okay. But is there any talk of a big Twinkie?
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and rescind the recommendation.
I'm just going to go watch Ghostbusters.
Because Connor just wants to watch Ghostbusters.
Paul, last time we talked about Battle of the Atom chapters 1 and 2, and you had some trepidation about chapter 3, which was going to be in the X-Men book. I assume you read it?
Mm-hmm.
Were you vindicated or worried, or what did you think?
Vindicated in that I was well-founded in my worries, but...
Oh, you didn't like it?
I didn't think it was that strong.
Interesting.
I just compared to those first two. Mm-hmm. It felt, you know, I don't know.
I quite enjoyed it. I think, it very much is a transitory issue where, you know, the characters start in one place and it's to get them to another place. I just love the story and the characters and the relationship between everybody really a lot. And I'm also on a really big Brian Wood kick right now. I just finally finished reading Northlander's trades over the past weekend. And just loved that series so much. But, I thought it was good. I mean, not as strong because, you know, you lose a bit of that snappiness that you could.
I don't think he has quite a handle on the individual character voices. Like, does fine with like Beast and that. And like, there's three Beasts in this, you know, right. From the different timelines. But like Wolverine doesn't feel right. I like the Rachel Gray stuff.
Yeah. I like that they're not telling us about this future Iceman.
Yeah.
He just keeps grunting. They don't tell us for sure if it's Bobby or
what. Like, what is going on?
I also was like, why aren't Scott and Jean wearing a helmet as they ride that motorcycle? But they realize how dangerous that is?
Maybe they were in New Hampshire.
No, they're in Pacific Coast Highway driving five down through L.A.
It's definitely illegal.
Although I guess
they wouldn't want to attract attention.
I guess Jean could just, you know, keep them safe from harm. But still, that's my first thought when I saw the panel of them driving down the PCH.
See, my second thought would be that it's not that she would keep them safe from harm, but she would just let the cops that were driving by think that they had the helmet on.
I was worried more about their safety more than anything else.
I feel like they're going to be okay from that.
Let's talk about Ultimate Comics, The Ultimates, number 30, because this book is awesome.
Yes!
And it's also, we're adding a fourth event, Paul, to the event, which I know you enjoyed so much the discussion of all the event books last week, but yeah. Now we're setting up for Cataclysm, which has been what this whole storyline that Joshua Hale-Fiakov has been writing in The Ultimates has been leading to, and now that's where we're going, is that something's happening to the Ultimate Universe, and then if Sue Storm from the future has come back to say it all goes away, and she takes Reed to show him that the Ultimate Universe is gone in the future. So we'll see if that actually happens or if they end up saving the day and not going away as everyone thinks is going to happen. But anyway, this book's awesome.
Yeah, and like I just it's gorgeous to look at, but also it's just it's all of the things that you want the Ultimates to be. It's
absolutely
modern, exciting rendition of classic scenarios, and not specific scenarios, but the
characters.
Kinds of scenarios and the characters. It feels like Marvel.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like good old-fashioned Marvel, like amped up a lot. Every issue that he did of this was great.
Yeah, I caught up on these after you've been raving about it, and this has been wonderful. I'm looking forward to now seeing what happens next. It's been really fun. And the thing is, I kept forgetting this was an Ultimates book because it's been so Fantastic Four-centric. Yeah. So when like the Ultimates character showed up at the end, I was like, oh, right, this is actually an Ultimates comic.
And it's tied into that Hunger miniseries.
Right, exactly, yes.
Which is fun, which I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Look at that. They touch.
I recommend anyone who really enjoyed the Ultimates or likes super fun superhero comics to check out Ultimates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Justice League 23.2, which we're going to ignore that fucking number.
This is the Forever Evil Mr. Sinister book, right?
No. Yes, exactly. This is the only one we're going to talk about, but because just take the conversation from last week and replay it this week because it's the same problems with it overall. But this was the issue with Lobo, the highly controversial one.
Now, I saw him on the cover and he looked normal.
Exactly. So he's in the cover looking normal. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe that's weird. So then I opened it and it was the new Lobo. And there's a lot of like meta commentary in this about how people need to shut up about it.
What's great is that they knew what people were going to say early enough to put it into the book before it happened.
He's been described online as Twilight Lobo, and he's not Twilight Lobo. He's more Rockabilly Lobo. He's got like a bouffant kind of thing. It looks kind of like guys I've seen in Rockabilly bands. But I kept waiting because of the cover. I kept waiting for some sort of transformation. Like, oh, maybe something happens to him in the story. He starts off all thin and Rockabilly and ends up as biker guy from the 90s. But that never actually happens. What you find out is that the biker guy from the 90s that has always been the way Lobo looks is actually an imposter pretending to be Lobo. So real Lobo's coming for him.
Yeah, they sort of had a cover there because Lobo has appeared in, what's that other book?
He's appeared in a couple of books, yeah.
He's in New 52, yeah.
Yeah.
So
this, and the thing is, it's basically a one-shot, and it's like, maybe we'll continue the story, maybe we won't. Because at the end, it's sort of like, the end question mark, and so maybe they'll bring back that story. Maybe they'll ignore it. Maybe something will happen. Who knows? But it was kind of funny in that I kept waiting for the twist to happen. It never happened.
He looks better. What's going on?
He's got like laser facial hair.
Yeah, so that was
like blue stuff. What is that?
He looks better in this book than he does in the stuff that's been like previewed online. Like
right.
The sort of standalone sketch.
Yeah, the standalone sketch made him look like Twilight Lobo, like the floppy hair.
That's Rocafort, I think, did the sketches, did the design.
And this is Ben Oliver?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thing is, Lobo historically is one of the worst characters ever created in comics, so whatever happens to him is fine.
People have asked, you know what the thing is, though? The old Lobo at least looked like Lobo. Like, he looked different than everything else. This character looks very non-interesting, which is, I guess, editorial mandate now. It's just make it look really boring. But it's funny because people are asking me, like, on Twitter or whatever, like, what do you think of it? And I was like, I don't. I do not think of it. I have no...
The less Lobo, the better.
I have no stake. I have no stake in this at all.
Lobo can go away like the Sentry for all I'm
have
concerned.
There been... And I'm going to put this nicely. Have there been any of these DC Villains books that I should look at?
There's been some that have been okay, but like no, nothing
not,
really...
Nothing. Really that, no, nothing that I would really recommend.
But the thing is, like, we were talking about this in the show last week, and I'm sure you listened right away when you got home, was that... again, they just don't make any sense in terms of what they mean. Like, the Riddler book this week was, you know, a fine Riddler one-shot story, but didn't really. And then there was another origin story that I read, and then there was this one, which was another, just a random Lobo story. And then there was Flash, which was basically another issue of the Flash. So when people come on back for the next issue,
it's like
be
the
confused.
New 52, where like some of it was all new and some of it was just a continuation.
Yeah, so there's no real editorial mandate
say,
here.
And then the other part of it being that, and this really cheese me off is the no creator credits on the covers of anything,
really.
And it's just I don't know what you think. I'm not going to pick up a book because I'm like, oh man, I really need to know more about.
They're hoping you'll pick it up because you think that it's still Francis Manipal and Flash, and
that's a
Capullo
and weird, and
yeah,
it's
really trying
and
to it's really trying to push the issue that no, the characters are important, not the creators, which seems to go against everything that the comics industry has grown into over the last 15 years.
Yeah, but they're trying to take it back. That's why.
I know, but that's...
Although the best moment, I thought, in those books was this week's Aquaman, in which Black Manta finds... It is one of the few ones actually tied to the Forever Evil storyline, and Black Manta goes to the big meeting and finds out that they killed the Justice League, or they claim to. And so he says, well, you killed Aquaman. That's my whole point being here. So he throws down his weapons and walks away. And says, why I'm Black Manta? Why kill Aquaman?
I just clang, really? Clang, clang, stomp.
I thought it was pretty funny. And then Paul, they move the moon and it messes up the tides, which is what we talked about last time. So actually, the tides get all screwy when Ultraman moves the moon. Anyway, Walking Dead 113.
Yeah, so this is the big next issue, I guess. This is how they work with these. Is the beginning of All Out War, and they've been building up to this for a really long time. And here's the thing: if Walking Dead 114. This is a slow ass burn. I mean, like, I just feel like it's been going on forever. Like, are you at this point in the trades yet? Have you met Negan yet?
We've met Negan. He did the thing with the bat.
Yeah.
And they're still plotting.
It's still going on. And I get the sense that Robert Kirkman just really likes to write Negan talking.
Right. Like, no, that definitely seems
like he's still like, think about how far behind the issue are from the trade that you read, and we're still going there.
Not super far, but
the
far
thing
enough.
Is, it's still pretty compelling.
The characters are good, and I think this is where it's going. I mean, my girlfriend read the latest issue, and she said, "You know what? I think I'm going to switch to trades." And she was complaining that it wasn't really a zombie story anymore. And I was like, "Yeah, it's sort of transitioning. It's now becoming a society story."
Yeah,
I mean, talked. They mentioned that in the whole 10th anniversary, which is next month, and the All Out War, is that the story is going to shift a bit to, you know, setting up this society as it is. And may or may not be interesting.
You know,
but
it's funny that you bring that up, because I you're right. Like, basically the whole thing is taking place inside these communities that they built. And so the dead are not really a factor, and I haven't noticed.
Right.
Because
eventually, how long,
for.
You know, it's been 10 years. How long can he write people running from zombies? Now it's more about,
I mean, they're there. It's a thing.
What happens in this world now? Are they just going to be forever warring tribes, or someone's going to try to build a society out of what's happening?
I think it's like you can... They're there, and then you start.
They can still show
things.
Up. They
yeah,
can still
like,
be.
A- they're always there, but it's like anything that's a threat in the world. Eventually, you just learn to deal with it, and
like
it
sharks.
Becomes part of your. It's sort of. I mean, they bite.
I think you would make them a non-entity for a while and a non-concern, only to bring them back later, if like have them, you know, evolve into something else or something.
Spoiler: the one guy who's really smart. Hey, Rick. Yeah, it's Bill. We formed a committee. You guys talk now? Yeah.
people may or may not know. So for All Out War, which is the big 10th anniversary storyline, they're going to go biweekly. So for 2 months. So you're going to get 8 issues in the course of 2 months.
Does anyone know if Charlie Adlard's okay?
Is that wrong? Four issues?
Four issues in 2 months.
Yeah, four issues.
Not so bad.
No. Charlie Adlard's great.
He's a champ.
He's
I mean, like, is there anybody who doesn't get nearly enough recognition? He's got to be the biggest one. He gets checks, but he doesn't get recognition.
Giant check. I think he's probably fine with that.
I'm going to go ahead and he's that was 114 issues. He's done
all but
six. So he's done 108 issues in a row.
Plus, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Now we're going to have a middle section soon where we've been discussing what to do. We've got some ideas. So those are going to pop in and out as we go. They won't always be there, but we're going to start throwing in some new segments in the middle. But for now, we're going to jump to some audience questions. The first one's from Joel in Prosser, Washington. And Joel says, I recently saw on DC solicitation that Geoff Johns is leaving Aquaman issue 25. He's being replaced by Jeff Parker. I'm not too familiar with his work. What are some of the past projects and our current current Aquaman fans? Oh, wow, I messed that up. What are some of his past projects and our current Aquaman fans in for a huge letdown or a good surprise? I'm glad to see the art team will continue.
Well, you're asking biased sources here, there, Stumpy.
Yeah, we love Jeff Parker, but we should mention this aside that they also announced that Manipal is off of Flash too. So you're gonna there's not very many left of the original teams.
That's a long time.
It's 2 years. Yeah.
I mean, you know, in the current comic book climate, that's a long time to be on a book. We love Jeff Parker. Big fans of Jeff Parker. I feel like he's.
We've talked a lot about him on the show.
Yeah, we have. I feel like he's pretty underrated by the community at large. But almost all the projects that he's been on, and he does all sorts of different kinds of things. He's got a lot of range. But almost all the stuff that he's been doing for the last few years has all been great. He did a good long run on Thunderbolts, which morphed into Dark Avengers. I've talked about that a lot. You can go back. He did Agents of Atlas with Gabe Hardman, and then after that he did the Red Hulk series with Hardman for a while. He did this great Mysterious, the Unfathomable miniseries from Wildstorm with Tom Fowler.
He's currently doing Batman 66,
obviously.
And he did the opening story of Adventures of Superman.
Yeah. He's got a really nice tone and sensibility with a little bit of a sense of humor to it. It's really good sort of superhero stuff that's not overwrought.
He does fun books, and that can sometimes be poison in today's market. But
they're not dumb books.
They're not dumb. But he does. It's sort of like the Mark Waid tone on Daredevil. He lives in. Is that it's they're serious business because you don't want to not have the books be serious business, but they're also fun and funny. So
his run on Thunderbolts with Kev Walker was like that was my favorite Marvel book for a really long time. There's a big chunk of that series that is just it's fantastic. I hope they collect it all in one big thing.
It featured a lot of characters that most people don't know, and I don't think they bought it because of it.
And Declan Shalvey pops up in there too.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Aquaman because I feel
like it's exactly right. I was like, that's one.
I do, but I also worry that I think the success of the book was predicated on Geoff Johns being the writer of it, the name factor.
You've got a chance, but in that case, the danger is that it won't be around that long if it is good. But whatever, I'll take what I can get.
It'll be fun. I'll read
Aquaman, no problem.
Yep,
very interested to see what artist pops up on that, or is it the same artist?
For now.
That's
weird, by the way. That doesn't seem like the right combination of flavors, but you never know. I guess they're probably trying to keep the people who were on there for Johns were probably there for. It's Ivan Reis, right?
No, he's just a Justice League. It's Paul Pelletier.
Oh, okay. There you go.
He's been doing it for about 6 months.
Geoff Parker on Twitter said that it's going to be about Aquaman kicking a lot of ass. So there you go.
I'm hoping they really sort of examine the main roots, though.
God, I could help. I could consult on that. Shane from Parts Unknown writes in. Marvel Now's recent use of time travel and the AOU repercussions have been discussed.
Age of Ultron.
Yeah, I was trying to figure it out as I was reading. Have been discussed title by title on the podcast, but not as a line-encompassing story gimmick. Line-encompassing story or gimmick. Shane goes on to mention that... Am I supposed to read that part? Shane goes on to mention that the all-new X-Men, Thor, God of Thunder, and Captain America, adding as he appreciates that they each incorporate time travel differently. I assume this would... Oh, he wrote a bunch and we summarized it. That's good. I assume that this would culminate in an Age of Ultron or some sort of status quo reset. However, Age of Ultron just seemed to further explain that, yes, something is happening in time with the Marvel Universe. Now it seems like Marvel may be using it to eliminate the Ultimates Universe and import some of those characters and elements into the standard timeline. Do you have any knowledge of how Marvel's editors mandated this theme? I don't have any knowledge. Or is there any indication of what the end game of this may be? Well, we're playing armchair quarterback like you.
Yeah, we don't know. And honestly, if we knew, we wouldn't tell you because it would ruin it. I mean, there have been many times over the past 8 years that we have known what's coming story-wise, but we haven't said anything because it would ruin it for you. Yeah, why would we do that?
What would we say about Angela returning?
No, but I mean, that
wouldn't have been anything nice.
It's the whole point of reading these stories is to read the story, right? So why would you want to know how it's all going to end? So, but I don't know. We don't know anything about it being a mandate. We don't really know anything about it in general. But I mean, there has been a common element because they're using, it seems like they're using Age of Ultron, which ended with this timeline being weakened, and so as an example, as a way to tell these stories. I don't know if it's.
I like
it. That's nothing wrong with it. It's just,
I think it's an example of good communication between the writers and the editors, and it's not a it feels like an event or a status quo, but it's not branded as an event,
yeah.
So it's not encumbered by all of that stuff, and it's just like, let's play with time stuff. You're doing something over there with time travel. Hey, this guy's doing something with time travel too. Maybe we should loop that all in, and we should say, you know, there's a lot going on right now, and maybe that's going to do some damage to the time stream. And I think it's a good kind of like in the background kind of event.
It's a really good subtle line-wide theme that you'd almost need to have pointed out to you,
right?
And it's kind of neat. I like that it's
like adding a new Nick Fury. Ugh.
What's that guy doing there? I don't know. I suppose do you think they're going to shut down? I mean, are we going to see the end of Ultimate, or is this like a red?
I have
red
no
hair?
Idea. I can see it easily going both ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can't predict. I don't like the idea of combining. If you're gonna end it. Yeah. Don't bring a bunch of stuff in there because it's gonna be weird.
But I think Dan's like, don't be. I would say just like, don't be so concerned. Or I wish that they wouldn't be so concerned with figuring out how it works and like how the fabric of the cosmos works. And just like, just you can tell another Spider-Man story and just leave it over there. And that's Ultimate Spider-Man, and that's fine. And people will be fine with that. And I don't think it's gonna confuse them. They'll figure it out.
So who knows? It'll be interesting to see. We'll see. That's the point. We'll see. Next one.
Okay. Marshall from London, Ontario says, I was recently at a Toronto Fan Expo Marvel panel with David Michelinie and Dan Slott, where I had the opportunity to ask a question I've long wondered but didn't really get a satisfying answer. Heroes seem to appear regularly in other heroes' books, but villains, for the most part, don't really stray beyond the borders of their canonical heroes. Is there a creative reason why appearing in the greater shared universe seems to be a firmer barrier for villains than for heroes? Apparently they gave some not-so-satisfying answers, like, we want to use those characters for ourselves. We're afraid the characters will come back broken/altered. And I thought that answer was weak because the instant rebuttal is, hello, Spider-Man, Wolverine, Iron Man, they're in about 16 books each at any given time. And the existence of A plus X alone should put this notion to rest. Characters can and do appear in other books without having their continuities fundamentally altered.
I actually never really thought about that, but it's kind of true. I mean, you very rarely see villains show up in other books. I always like it when they do, because it's always interesting to see it, you know, people go up against somebody new, bounce off against them.
I feel like that's a really easy way to mix up the sort of standard, sort of repetitive kind of tropes that they have, because, you know, the villains are a lot of times designed against the characters. So,
like, right.
You know, Flash villains, I know that we're not talking about Marvel, but like Flash villains are all sort of designed to counter the spider
right.
thing, you know. Or
yeah, they're all science problems. That's why they were originally right. created. And you know, since Barry was a scientist,
it's interesting. I don't know. I guess I never thought about it, but it's true. It's mostly true. I mean, it's always.
I feel like I'm trying to. I feel like there was a story that, I mean, like Civil War. I think actually was a good example of mixing that up a lot, because remember all the villains.
Well, tends to happen in events, because events, everybody gets together. But like, you know, regular books, it's very rare. I'm trying to think off the top of my head when the last time I saw it, but it's fun. And I guess maybe they don't want to overdo it, or maybe it is because they're so closely tied to those heroes that they feel like they need to keep them together. But
I'm gonna make a guess, and this is not based on anything other than what I've heard about, you know, just how things work. I'm guessing that editorial offices, you know, they own those characters, and they just don't want to not be able to use those things when they need to.
Right.
They don't want to lose an arrow in their quiver, basically. They don't want to find out, like, oh, we're going to put Stilt Man in here, but he's off in the Hulk world.
Right.
And so from it's a, from just a, like a protective departmental thing, which I know is boring.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely more of an editorial thing that they want to at least know where everybody is at one time, and not have them come back damaged or changed in some way, or maybe not knowing what, you know, if the writer's going to need that character sooner than they might expect.
Well, an answer to the changing the character would be that we all know that a writer's can't really do too much to change the heroes. They have to return everything the way they found it, basically, for the most part. Mm-hmm. It's the illusion of change. Villains, maybe writers would feel like they have a bit more, like, well, if I can't do something with a hero, I can do something with a villain.
It'd be very easy just to say you can do that, but you can't do anything to them.
I know, but maybe that's...
It's just interesting. I always loved it as a kid whenever, like, Magneto would show up in an Avengers book or something like that. But yeah, one of them that really transcends that is Dr. Doom. He's ostensibly a Fantastic Four villain, but he's also become sort of everybody's villain.
Yeah.
You know?
As a force of nature thing, it's like the Punisher too. Like, you can put the Punisher somewhere and it's more about, yeah, it's not necessarily, you don't get a lot of character from that, from like bringing the Punisher into a Daredevil story, say. Because he is that, like, it's firing a bullet. And the same for Dr. Doom. You're not going to get a lot of stuff with Dr. Doom that way.
I don't know. It's interesting. It's I hadn't really thought about it.
It's like a location change. It's not. It's, yeah. You know.
It feels like it's a thing they do more often, especially now because people are seem to be less likely to create new villains because they don't want to give away IP.
I remember there was a nod to it in Crisis on Infinite Earths when in the very beginning. You know, the Joker's robbing some bank or something, and Flash shows up and he's like, "This isn't fair. You're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be over there. I'm not ready for this." You know, so it's always fun when they pop up. It doesn't happen that often.
You can also, I mean, if you want to create a reason for it to make sense of it, you could say it's like it's all about like territory and jurisdiction. Like, you know, the Joker has his territory. He has his power. You know, like his seat of power. And so why would he move?
But it also is a good, and speaking of like weapons and things or quivers or whatever metaphor you want, it's always a more powerful moment if it doesn't happen all the time, right? So I remember as a kid, the John Byrne Superman After Crisis, one of the covers was the Joker, you know, it was Superman's body with the Joker face, and you all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, what is the Joker? I mean, you know, it's not normal. If it's like Batman cover, it's still cool, but it's not as exciting because he's there semi-annually, but... You know, he's never in the Superman book, so what's going to happen is so in that sense, you get that added level of excitement to an unusual pairing that wouldn't be there if it happened all the time. I don't know.
Yeah, but then immediately fans are like, can he be back in his own book, please?
Listen, I don't know why they do it, but it's interesting discussion topic. Thank you, Marshall.
Yeah.
So those are the emails. You can give us a contact at ifanboy.com, or you can also call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697.
Unless you are a 29-second robot.
Let's do some plugs. Paul, cool. We got a Booksplode coming up.
We got a Booksplode coming up. We're going to be talking about Batman Year 100 by Paul Pope. I'd never read it up to this point, so I'm excited to check it out and talk to people about it. So that's our semi-regular book club that we're going to be doing. And that's the next one that's up. Yeah. Also over on my other show, Fuzzy Typewriter, I've been talking about The Breaking Bad. So if you're enjoying The Breaking Bad and you're current with it, check us out every Monday. And me and Rebecca Shinsky are talking about each episode as they air. So lots of spoilers, obviously.
Josh, are you current with Breaking Bad?
Mm-hmm.
All right, just making sure.
Real, real good. Three lefts.
I mean, I'm like day after because I do iTunes.
No, but you've seen the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Paul, you missed what happens when you're not live is you miss Paul and I's day after IM discussion of it and speculation of what's coming.
Yeah, there's a big cliffhanger on this.
I'm not into it as much as you guys.
That's okay.
Fair enough.
I watch.
We love it enough. And also, if you're into the Luther, we had two discussions of Luther series 3. So one on
watched it yet, Paul,
episodes 1 and 2,
3 and 4.
We're pretty critical of it. I was very excited about it. Let's talk about Luther and Dave Acampo and Jay Stringer. Experienced crime writers, we kind of break it down.
Well, there's a thing. If you recall, do you recall way back when we did your show on the first season of Luther?
Yeah,
I wasn't in love with it like you guys were.
Yeah, so
I really loved season two a lot.
I love.
I didn't love season one so much.
We figured out sort of there's patterns with the show, and so it's kind of a good cleanser because we're gushing and very enthusiastic about Breaking Bad.
I don't know if Luther would get the attention it gets if it wasn't Idris Elba, who the current geek, like Messiah.
Yeah, cast Idris Elba and everything. Yeah.
So I don't know if it would just take some other random actor and put him into Luther's stories. I don't know.
I think it ends very well.
Well, that's the same kind of anything where you've got a main character and the show is pulled along by the.
No, I'm saying is I think the affection that people have for him is. Might be outweighing because I think story wise,
I really like the first like a lot. I like them a lot.
I don't like Breaking Bad, so you're weird.
I'm not normal. I mean, and I'm not like one of those people like I'm so crazy, but I don't like the same things that other people do. So for whatever, like I really like Luther more than I like Breaking Bad, and I know that that's not a mathematical. Breaking Bad's a better show. I can tell you that.
Yeah, it is.
But I like Luther better, if that makes sense.
Head over to ifanboy.com to comment on the show. Tell Josh why he's weird. You can find this podcast, all of other podcasts, every upcoming show. You'll find them all there at ifanboy.com. Follow all the action at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. Give us a like.
Much less action.
Give us a like. If you like this show, go to Facebook and give us a like.
Like it.
What's going to hurt you?
You can email at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any questions, comments, concerns, the discussion topics, etc. That just reminded me of old local New York City TV commercials.
If you dig
tell them what's good about our carpet store. And they cut to his sister.
Oh my God, it's so awesome. We have carpets of all kinds.
Do we have Berber?
Of course we've got Berber. We've got Shag. We've got everything.
Is it stain-proof?
Stain-proof? Are you kidding me? My God.
You could keep your grandmother in there all week and never have to worry about it. Come down to the Carpet Center. Queens Boulevard.
That one's on Northern Boulevard, let's be honest.
All right, I'm going to do this in my Philadelphia accent. If you dig us and think this show holds water, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcast, spread the iFanboy balls. That's what it says.
That wasn't an accent. You just said "water" in the middle of it.
Water.
You do have a.
That's
smile.
What happened.
I love hearing your accent come out every once in a while.
I don't have an accent.
Dude,
I don't.
Yeah, once do, a while.
Every once in a while. It's a little bit. You do a little.
No,
bit.
I don't. I don't have. I don't have an accent.
You basically sound exactly the same as Ben Margera.
Jesus Christ! Son of a bitch. He's from Westchester.
April, Phil, we're gonna put poop on him.
Okay, till next
from
week.
Westchester, PA. Not
I'm
Philly.
Connor.
It's a related. I'm Paul. It's a related accent. I know about these things. I haven't thought about Bam Margera in a while, and I'm totally cool with that. Goodbye. I'm Josh.